The U.S. Coast Guard, narco-terrorism, Chinese naval vessels, and dangerous rescues at sea. This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone. I am Matt Parker. We're going to continue our Modern Warfare series, continue with the U.S. Coast Guard this evening. First of all, I want to talk about what the Coast Guard actually does. And we're going to, as we go through their kind of roles and responsibilities, we're going to highlight two main themes that continue to develop to be a challenge to America's national security. One, narco-terrorism. Narco meaning like illegal drugs being imported to the United States. And lastly would be combating China. Any type of conflict in the future with the Chinese Communist Party, there is the belief that in some role the Coast Guard would play a large part of servicing our national security needs during such a conflict in China. So we're going to go through those things. Let me take a quick ad break and then we'll get started. All right, welcome back everyone. So let's just dive right in what the U.S. Coast Guard actually does, according to GoCoastGuard.com. The Coast Guard, it's a unique branch of the military responsible for an array of maritime duties, and that's from ensuring safe, lawful commerce to performing rescue missions in severe conditions. Nearly 42,000 men and women are actively serving in the Coast Guard to defend America's borders and protect the maritime environment. Now, fascinating enough, the Coast Guard doesn't actually fall under the Department of Defense, according to military.com. Until recently, the Coast Guard was under the Department of Transportation, but recent legislation has moved the Coast Guard under the Department of Homeland Security. Here's where it becomes interesting. The Coast Guard is actually considered a military service because during times of war or conflict, the President of the United States can transfer any or all assets, that's like the ships, the helicopters, etc., all assets of the Coast Guard to the Department of the Navy to continue aiding the Navy in its naval combat operations. So, for example, what does the Coast Guard actually do? Just an average day in the Coast Guard. A lot of different things. Here's, let me just name a handful. In an average day, the Coast Guard will conduct 109 search and rescue cases. These are for like those, owners of sailboats or yachts that get into difficult sea conditions. Or even a merchant maritime marine, like one of those vessels you see outside of Los Angeles port with large containers, perhaps one of those getting into a search and rescue scenario. Every day, they'll save 10 lives and assist 192 people in distress. It will protect nearly $3 million in property. And lastly, it'll seize 169 pounds of marijuana and 306 pounds of cocaine, valued over $9.5 million. Quite a lot in just a single day for the Coast Guard. Now, if you've been paying attention to my Modern Warfare series, you heard me discuss the United States Navy and its role, and now it transforms, or I should say modernizes its force to evolving adversaries. I want to compare briefly the differences between the United States Navy and the Coast Guard. According to USO.org, the main difference of the Coast Guard versus the Navy lies in their contrasting geographic scopes, distinct core operations, and then vastly different sizes. Let me explain this. The Coast Guard mainly operates within the U.S. and its waterways, whereas the Navy's mission requires its personnel, its vessels, its aircraft to travel all around the world. Now, furthermore, most of the Coast Guard's operations are aimed at maritime law enforcement and protecting U.S. waterways and shorelines, whereas the Navy is focused on maintaining a war-ready fleet and ensuring the freedom of the global seas. And additionally, the Navy is much larger than the Coast Guard, about 12 times more active duty personnel. So that's a quick overall brief of what it is the Coast Guard actually does and how it complements the United States Navy in many of its duties and responsibilities. So let's get into kind of the one of the two big themes we're going to discuss in the Coast Guard, and it's the issue of narco-terrorism. Understanding narco-terrorism is a couple things. One, from the 80s onward, and perhaps even before that, the issue of illegal drugs, specifically such as cocaine, being making its way to the United States via Central and South America has been an ongoing issue. Since even President Reagan's time, the war on drugs has been ongoing. Not here to debate on what America should do with our drugs, legalize, keep them illegal, how we should combat that. It's not what I'm talking about. All we're talking about is the challenge that these drug trafficking organizations present to the national security of the United States. Okay, and what I'll be specifically highlighting tonight is how the Coast Guard combats the efforts of drug trafficking organizations moving their product via the seas to reach the shores of the United States. So what I'll be discussing is the drug submarines. These are also known as narco submarines. And what they are is what it sounds like. You might have seen actually some good video footage of a U.S. Coast Guard unit jumping on top of this semi-submersible submarine. What this is a submarine that's almost completely submersible, but it's just, let's say, the top fifth of the vessel itself is just above the water. Okay, this is kind of a rudimentary vehicle, but it does quite the job, and we'll get into it. And I'm going to highlight some data from the Center of International Maritime Security. Drug submarines, and I'm going to call them narco submarines moving forward, are manufactured in the thick jungles of eastern Colombia and are not the primitive vessels you might imagine. The Revolution Armed Forces of Colombia, also known as FARC, you might have read them about them in the news or Wall Street Journal, etc. The FARC's narco submarines boast sophisticated anti-detection features and navigation. They can haul up to 10 tons of cocaine and can cost upward of $10 million, just the submarine itself. Now, originally, they creatively named these go-fast boats, and those were the first vehicles of choice in moving cocaine up the coast of Central America. Yet, improvements in radar surveillance, as well as just increased patrolling, saw more of these types of speedboats interdicted. So this is what led to the development of subsurface vessels, and it became increasingly attractive. So when narco subs are actually interdicted, meaning the Coast Guard actually finds them and jumps on board, the crew members of the narco sub will actually or typically scuttle the vessel via a system of sophisticated drainage valves. Scuttle just means sink. All right, they will sink that narco sub and jump out. For example, they can sink $11 million worth of evidence, the vessel, the drugs, etc., and that can be sunk in a matter of minutes if the narco sub believes, hey, this Coast Guard vessel is pulling up on us and they've spotted us. We got to get rid of the evidence. So the recovery of cocaine, it then morphs into the recovery of the crew members, which actually sank it, which is the Coast Guard will be doing that first, recovering those crew members. Although the United States Drug Trafficking Vessel Interdiction Act of 2008 now incriminates unidentified submarine crews for attempting to evade authorities, law enforcement cannot typically prosecute for the submarine and its cargo if it's lying on the ocean floor. Now, narco submarines also pose international security threats. And this is almost where we start to transition away from just the intention of transporting illegal drugs to the United States to where we get into the issue of terrorism and how such a semi-submersible vessel could be used with a terrorist intent in mind. So a narco submarine-based attack on the United States, you could really shelve this as a black swan event, a very rare, small, tiny percentage chance of actually happening. But it would be a game-changing development, difficult to even contrive hypothetically. Still, there are a number of points that are just difficult to dismiss. For example, the three factors that America's national security would have to consider of such an attack on the United States by a terrorist using a narco submarine, a semi-submersible submarine, would be the establishment of a motive by the group, the acquisition of the actual sub itself, and then just executing that attack. If you remember, in 2000, the year 2000, the USS Cole was rammed by a small boat laden with explosives. 17 Americans were killed and scores more injured in that suicide attack. Now, an attack on a Navy vessel like the USS Cole in this style, taking a small vessel with lots of explosives, ramming it into a U.S. Navy vessel, that's altogether feasible. This has happened. So I'm not speculating on whether it could or couldn't. It actually has. Now, a subsurface approach, with meaning that narco sub type of vessel, with a large payload could even do more damage with little to no warning. And in this sense, U.S. harbors on both the East Coast, West Coast, it could be susceptible. And the target doesn't even have to be a military-affiliated target like the USS Cole. Large groups of people, often headed by and including American citizens, the frequent cruise ships, which regularly traverse Caribbean and Pacific coastline. Those cruise ships, you've seen them on the commercials, they're bulky, difficult to maneuver, and they don't really possess an inherent defense system. Just use your imagination with you, not to be a fearmonger or anything like that. But imagine a semi-submersible submarine was cruising outside of one of the many islands in the Bahamas, laden with explosive. It was being piloted by a terrorist group that had the intent to destroy a military or civilian maritime vessel, like a cruise ship, or perhaps even a naval vessel as well by the U.S. military. And with those explosives aboard that semi-submersible, not being detected, rams those vessels and kills as many people as possible. We've already seen this with the USS Cole in a different type of scenario. Now with the development of the semi-submersibles, that type of attack isn't outside the realm of possibility. And like any security matter, just like whether it's your personal home or defending the borders of the United States, you always have the push and the pull of what's probable and what isn't. So where do I focus my resources the most effectively? The type of attack I'm describing, though I haven't done the data analysis, I'm thinking this is well below 0.1% chances of actually happening. But it always comes back to, is there the intent, the ability of acquiring such a submarine, and then the actual execution of that attack? We know that drug trafficking organizations have been using these types of vessels for quite some time now to transport their illegal drug products to the United States. It's not that far off to imagine a terrorist organization acquiring such a submarine, whether building it themselves or buying it from a drug trafficking organization, to then use that in such a terrorist attack on the shores of the United States. Now, I'll close out with this narco-terrorism theme. Reading an analysis conducted by Dahl and David for the Naval Postgraduate School, discussing how submersible vessels have actually been used by terrorist groups. For example, the Tamil Tigers in Sri Lanka conducting these regional operations. Current submersible threat can be domestic or could originate from outside the continental United States. Submersibles have the capability to be used to covertly smuggle drugs, weapons, or even people into the United States. And the point he's making is the vessels themselves can be used as stealth, waterborne, improvised explosive devices. I'm sure if you paid attention to the wars in Iraq or Afghanistan, you heard that term IEDs, right? Those are another way of saying a roadside bomb. So what he's suggesting here is a waterborne IED, via the semi-submersible vessel. And it's the ability of these vessels to evade detection and interdiction efforts, combined with their ability to transport large payloads undetected over great distances. It constitutes an emerging meta threat to the homeland security enterprise. So with that being said, we understand the Coast Guard's duties and roles around defending the U.S. shores and seaways, the challenge of both legal drug transportation into the United States via these semi-submersible vessels, as well as the possibility of a terrorist attack if they were to acquire such a submarine. Let's transition away from those kind of tactical issues to more of the greater strategic issue. It feels like almost every podcast, China has to be brought up as they, by many in the defense establishment, continue to be recognized as the greatest threat to the security of the United States. So an article provided by Brent Sadler for the Heritage Foundation argues that the Coast Guard has historically always played a tremendous role in wartime conflicts. And in the event the United States would be in a military conflict with China, the Coast Guard would have to fill many gaps, and currently, as it stands, needs to adapt its technologies, its training, in order to meet and fill those gaps. So he argues a few key takeaways. Well, number one, the U.S. Coast Guard will be a vital element in the next global war, especially for securing military logistics and ensuring continued safe passage for shipping. Second, he argues the last time the Coast Guard supported blue water global wartime naval operations was back in World War II, and it likely lacks that capacity and that capability today, which is why he suggests a dedicated and well-resourced program is needed to ensure that the Coast Guard and the Navy are able to quickly transition to and sustain a wartime footing together. Should the United States and China come to blows, the fighting would be prolonged and global. The homeland would likely not be spared bloodshed. He's talking about the United States itself. Winning such a fight would require sustaining a wartime economy and a fighting force capable of to prevent a Chinese communist victory. The U.S. Coast Guard will be a vital element in such a fight, especially with regard to securing military logistics and ensuring continued safe passage for foreign shipping, which would be essential for a wartime economy. Now, in recent years, the Coast Guard has operated in the Black Sea, which you've heard me talk about in the discussions of the Ukrainian war, as well as the South China Sea. And it's putting its cutters are just U.S. Coast Guard vessels, in close proximity to the naval forces of both China and Russia. And this places U.S. cutters into great power peacetime competition, which can quickly escalate into open conflict. Now, such confrontations can quickly de-escalate as well. And it's this dynamic places added pressure on the Coast Guard to be able to control escalation, preferably away from wider conflict. And despite this danger, because of the benefit that deployed cutters provide, such overseas deployments are not likely to diminish. In fact, they are more likely to play an increasingly important role in the nation's competitive strategy with China and Russia. And these missions are also provide invaluable experience. And as great power competition heats up, the need to equip cutters with capabilities suitable for gray zone operations will increase. The gray zone operations that Sandler is kind of mentioning here, it's when it's a disputed area, for example, in the South China Sea. We know that China claims a great portion of the South China Sea from a historical basis, but many of the other countries, so I'd say that's the Philippines, Malaysia, Vietnam, etc., depend on those same seas for fishing rights. And that's a challenge currently right now. Now you imagine a U.S. Coast Guard cutter being on the border of, say, the Philippines, operating in perhaps a joint military exercise. And now you have Chinese either fishing vessels or their own Coast Guard in the same proximity. You can see this becomes a kind of a gray zone scenario of not direct military conflict, but what if one was to perhaps take defensive positioning or offensive positioning against the other and back and forth. It is these capabilities that Sadler's arguing that the Coast Guard needs to enhance if there were ever to be a large-scale conflict, global conflict between the United States and China. So we break this down in a few ways and how the United States Coast Guard can enhance those capabilities, starting with just giving the paucity, the scarcity of U.S. merchant mariners, and in fact there are too few U.S. commercial ships. Any loss to this fleet in particular would imperil a long-time war effort. So this reality places an added importance on protecting every U.S. crewed merchant ship, making convoy missions a potential deciding factor in the next major war. What Sadler is talking about, it's the United States economy has to keep going along in a global war with China so it can continue to have the revenues to produce the wartime budget necessary to combat China. And to protect much of that global trade, the U.S. Coast Guard will be even a more important part of that equation in such a conflict. Now, The Navy has stated that it's not going to be able to fulfill that role, protecting those U.S. crewed merchant ships, given its the Navy's limited capacity to conduct wartime operations and defend critical shipping lanes and seas, like simultaneously. So the U.S. would have likely have no allies to turn to for help with escorting vital shipping, and as most U.S. allies have similarly neglected this mission. So this is why sailors are arguing that in that vacuum, the Coast Guard will need to be prepared to protect vital U.S. shipping against long-range aircraft that employ anti-ship cruise missiles, as well as against submarines. The second thing Sadler argues is that the Chief of Naval Operations and the Coast Guard Commandant should execute dedicated annual wartime drills in the Atlantic and the Pacific. And this is very common between military branches in the United States military, doing joint training so we can be what we call like have the interoperability, basically working together well. And the goal of those annual wartime drills would be to ensure every crew of the Coast Guard's major cutter fleet is exposed to wartime operational training within a two-year period. Lastly, Congress should increase the Coast Guard's operational budget to enable increased wartime training and overseas deployments. And this really feeds into the need of how do we get the Coast Guard to where we would like to see it to protect our shipping during a war with China, as well as participating in any actual wartime scenarios. The Coast Guard is currently operating at capacity. And yet, to be ready for the demands of the nature of the next major war, it must do more. So setting aside arguments for kind of a larger cutter fleet, Congress can assist today by just funding exercises that practice wartime skills with emphasis on convoy and anti-submarine warfare operations. This kind of gets back into protecting our merchant vessels. Additionally, as the Coast Guard plays an increasingly important role with partner nations standing up to China, standing up to Russia, it's going to be necessary to review and, as appropriate, just increase operational budgets. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, as well as this continued series, learning more about the U.S. national security and our efforts from each of these military branches. As always, I hope you're picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker, and this is Brief Before Impact.